Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women Leading the Way Radio Show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today. Well, I just wanted to say good morning to everyone. It is Monday. It is March 19th. It's beautiful here in San Diego, California, as we just got done with some major rain. So the sun has come out. It's beautiful. And I want to welcome everyone to Women Leading the Way in Business Today Radio. With me today is our lovely leading lady. I have Lynn Folks, who is a principal with Upstart Group, on the phone. Lynn, are you there?
Well, good morning, Michelle. Yes, it's very nice to be dry.
It's so nice when the rain is gone, and that's why we live here in Southern California, correct?
Correct, although the hail yesterday was very surprising.
That was a bit of a shock. That's not a normal occurrence here, so I love it. I love it. Well, thank you for being on the radio with me today, because I know just from knowing you, there is a lot that I know you can share and that we're going to unpack. But what I'd like for our listeners to know, do you mind kind of sharing with everybody a little bit about Upstart Group and what your focus is and what you guys do there?
Well, sure, Michelle. My business partner, Sue Sanford, and I started our marketing strategy agency, Upstart Group, about 2 years ago, and Sue runs our Seattle office, and I am down here in San Diego, and we are a rent-a-director of marketing type of service for startups, small and medium businesses who either can't afford or don't need a full-time, fully-loaded headcount director of marketing.
And do you mind, I mean, sharing, like, what are some of the things when somebody doesn't need a full-time director of marketing, what does that entail as far as some of the services that you might provide? I mean, specifically, what do you guys do in bits and pieces, if I can ask?
Sure. So from a marketing director standpoint, or even a CMO, chief marketing officer perspective, what we go in and look at is organize all the competitive customer and necessary product research for a company, then utilizing that information, develop marketing plans at least 1 year out. So how do we take this specific product to market, targeting this specific audience, using these value propositions and messaging and positioning such that that audience will want to buy that particular product?
Well, and I got to back up, because one of the things I love most for me being a business consultant is I always love to hear, you know, the quote-unquote story, you know, how you decided to launch into business. Now, you and I have talked before, so even before that, what you have a background with a pretty large organization that I think most of us would know, but do you mind sharing your corporate background before you even started in business? What did you do before you were Upstart Group?
Well, I have a background of hardware and software technical marketing from, you know, before Windows was even a product. And I met my business partner, Sue Sanford, when we were both at Microsoft in corporate marketing. So I was at a hardware company and the very first third-party Windows application software developer when I was recruited by Microsoft corporate marketing, and that's where I met Sue. She and I both worked in corporate marketing for several years. At one point, she and I decided we were managers, senior managers, and we decided to disband that particular marketing group and out of corporate and put them out into the product and customer group. So she went to enterprise marketing and was doing lots of major channel marketing initiatives with companies like Intel and IBM and Dell. And I had always been focused on operating system marketing, even as part of corporate. So I moved into the Windows and Windows NT group and continued my focus on operating system marketing.
Well, and I got to ask, because, you know, so many of us have heard, oh, when you work at Microsoft, I mean, it was an amazing experience. You hear stories of people working at Google. So I'm going to segue a little bit. I mean, what was it like working at Microsoft? Was it what it felt, what we've all heard? I mean, it was just amazingly entrepreneurial and, you know, it was just idea central. I mean, what can you share? What was it like working there?
It was incredibly like that. It was, our mantra was ask forgiveness, not permission. So if you had a great idea, yeah, if you had a great idea, sell it to your manager and just run with it. And I think that was a really interesting way, you know, to have a business culture. And it allowed for everyone took ownership of their programs because usually it was their idea. It wasn't some big thing handed down, you know, from senior management. It was grassroots, you know, development and marketing efforts coming, you know, from the ground up.
Do you see, you know, with what you do now and working with some of these startup high-tech businesses, I mean, have you seen or experienced companies that are smaller that kind of encompass that type of culture with the technology companies you guys work with or that you've known of, as opposed to just the big Google, Microsoft, those kinds of companies?
I do. The interesting thing about technology companies is that often the product stems from a developer's idea of what would be cool to create and not necessarily what the market needs next. So we definitely see that creative entrepreneurial spirit throughout high-tech companies.
And I got to ask you, I mean, what would make you leave Microsoft? If it was so grand, what were you thinking, girl? Why did you decide to leave, or was it, you know, that just the opportunity was there?
No, it was the opportunity to have a life, because a normal work week for me at Microsoft was approaching 60 hours, and that was expected. And right before product launch, as we moved towards release to manufacturing, 80 hours was not uncommon per week.
Wow. And so from that point, did you and Sue get together immediately after that? How did you guys, you know, decide that you wanted to start in business then together?
No, my husband and I took a sabbatical, and Sue took a sabbatical to have children, and then she worked in education marketing for a private school as their director of marketing for some years. When she was ready to do something different, it was about the same time that I was reentering the United States after my sabbatical. And rather than both of us look for real jobs, we said, hey, let's start that company we've been talking about doing. Now's the perfect time.
I love it. I love it because, you know, everybody with their story of how they started. I like you saying, I don't want to get a real job. That's pretty funny, Lynn, because, you know, don't you find as an entrepreneur you kind of work your butt off anyway?
I do, but it's on my terms, and it's on things that I like to do, and I can set my hours as necessary. It doesn't have to be 8 to 5 in that particular office in that location. So I really love the flexibility.
Well, and I'm going to dovetail on that because you are so good about kind of setting those parameters. I mean, do you mind sharing with our listeners and, you know, folks that are listening in about how do you set those parameters? Because I hear over and over from small business owners, you know, CEOs, women-run companies, where they just say, man, finding balance is so difficult. But I do find that you are, you know, in my conversations with you, you really have a good handle on that. How do you keep to that? What do you do to be able to set those kind of like balance and parameters among when you do things?
Well, I don't think that I'd be able to do it if I did not have a business partner, because since Sue and I work on and support every single client, no matter what location our clients are in, we can backfill for each other. For instance, and I know what you're alluding to, is I have an agreement with my business partner that Thursday mornings is my golf morning, and I get to go play with my women's golf club on Thursday mornings. On the other hand, Sue backfills for me any client concerns during that time. At the same time, Sue has two daughters, ages 14 and 11. The eldest is my godchild. And so she really wants to be available to them for before and after school and school activities, et cetera. So when those occur, I in turn backfill for her. So we really try to do a good job of supporting each other's, you know, having a life and what that means to each person. And I couldn't see doing it if it was just myself.
Yeah, and I love hearing that because I have to say, you know, talking to the different businesswomen we do through Connected Women of Influence, you know, hearing some of our panelists talk about their biggest challenges or through our, which you know, our roundtable groups, which are like peer-to-peer groups, that is one of the biggest things I think businesswomen and professional women, you know, have is how do you put balance on whether you have kids, whether they're grown, whether they're in school, you know, even the empty nesters, it's, you know, trying to find the balance of how much time you put into business to be productive. But, you know, women always feel such guilt, you know. I know that seems to be kind of like the parameter there, that women feel guilt when they feel like they need to work harder. Do you kind of get a sense for that based on the executives and women you come across?
You know, I do absolutely. And it's kind of a shame because when you talk to male business executives, they would write off that morning of golfing as a business expense, you know, as networking. Now, most of the women that I know in business do not golf, the majority of them, but it, for a women to go on, you know, a networking thing during the day that included something fun like shoe shopping or wine tasting, that would be frowned upon, whereas a male business group going out to play golf of a morning would be, oh, yes, of course, that's perfectly normal. And I think that's just a huge dichotomy and such a shame.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that leads to a radio show, you know, the double standard. It's like, you know, golfing is looked upon as a legitimate business kind of thing, and what women do to kind of build those relationships and maybe do something different than golf, that's looked upon as just socializing and, you know, not correct business behavior. How funny. Wow, that's something we can unpack later, don't you think?
Absolutely. Be a great discussion.
I think so. I'm going to segue because I know one of the things that you know that I really wanted to talk to you about, you know, at least in general, is that, you know, there's all this talk and conversation about values and how important they are to business. And I absolutely agree, but it is, you know, in some cases it's looked upon as this airy-fairyville, oh, you know, it's just kind of the 30-foot level looking at things kind of very altruistically. But then there's the other side of the coin, which I think is where you fall, and you've seen some success with this, is those businesses who have a very set form of values and know exactly what those are can show, I guess, maybe better success in business. I mean, describe, what do you see and how important are values to business, if I can ask?
They are so important to setting up a marketing plan, for instance, and in fact an overall strategic and business plan, that they are one of the first three things we tackle with a new client. So the three pieces that we start with before we go any further are vision, mission, and values. And the vision is what the organization's vision is for their community. The mission is what they're going to do to make that vision a reality. And the values are the pieces that they hold dear that enable them to act on that mission statement. They're the way we go about it with a new client, for instance, is to take the C-suite or the principals of the company and walk through some exercises to draw out their personal values and then move those into how their personal values affect how they do business, how they structure that business, and how they manage that business. And once you can get to corporate values, those should drive every single decision. Any decision that comes up that does not map to those corporate values should, you know, shouldn't be made. I mean, hiring, huge.
I'm just curious. Oh, so sorry, I'm interrupting. But how I'm curious. It's like, you know, I mean, again, different companies, different strokes, different folks. Is there any sort of like, you know, what's the response of some people when you go down this road? I mean, do you usually get people that warmly embrace this process? Is it really difficult, you know, with new companies that are looking to start up and find this? I mean, what do you find is the normal reaction or mindset of people going through this process? Is it, you know, brain difficult that some people just can't do it? I'm just kind of curious what you see.
No, everyone can do it, but what we usually get is, seriously, we're going to spend half a day on this?
And do you find there's a difference between men and women? I mean, are women more, just from a kind of a genre standpoint, do they embrace it easier than men do, or is there any difference? Do you find there's any difference in that?
I don't find that there's any difference. And usually by the time we get to the end of day one with a new client, we usually start off with a two-day offsite. And by the time we get to end of day one, they're starting to see where the work they did in the morning of vision, mission, values, how that is starting to affect their decision-making regarding branding and value propositions.
And so did I hear you say that it takes maybe half of the time of going through the planning process with new clients, that the values part is crafted off for that much time of a, let's say, a whole day type of planning meeting?
We usually do a two-day offsite, and I would say most of the first morning is vision, mission, and values. And those are substantial pieces of work upon which the rest of all decisions are made from that. I mean, we put them up on the board, you know, we put them up on the wall on big sheets of paper and constantly refer back to that as we go through target audience, value propositions, competitive analysis, et cetera.
Well, and I'm putting you on the spot a little bit, but I'm curious, I'd love for you to share, I mean, what's been one of the most difficult, you know, processes or clients, without saying who they are, of course, that, you know, you went through where it's like they just weren't getting it? I mean, how did you overcome that, or has that ever happened?
It has not happened, actually.
Wow.
We have a pretty good process, and we break it down into, you know, little baby steps. So if they can complete each step, we can take them, you know, and it's easy for us to see, you know, partway through the process, okay, here's what we're going to end up with. But for them to own it and develop it such that it's theirs, it's part of their company culture, they just needed to get it down on paper.
And I'm hoping that we can continue to hear about some of this stuff, because I want you to really think through, it's like, you know, as you run a business, I would love for you to kind of give some advice to our listeners as women-led companies or women executives and professionals who are leading the way in their company or their department or for their business. But, you know, if you had to do things over, Lynn, it's like, what would be maybe two things that you would do differently, you know, for you and Susan starting up that you maybe didn't think of when you first started? For any of our, you know, newer entrepreneurs or business owners that are listening, what would you do differently?
We would have hired the experts we needed right off the bat instead of trying to do some things ourselves. For instance, we did not have a website for the first year because, for starters, we were busy right when we opened for a while. So we'd kind of put it on the back burner because we'd rather work for paying clients than, you know, develop our own marketing materials. And then when we finally did have a little bit of a breather and really needed our website for networking and marketing initiatives of our own, we thought, well, you know, we're marketing, we can write our own website copy. Well, 3 months later, we realized, no, we would never allow a client to write their own website copy. What were we thinking? So hiring, you know, hire the branding expert, hire the website designer, hire the marketing copywriter, you know, spend the money and hire the experts that you need, because they will help you get your business kicked off more quickly and build your revenue stream in a fraction of the time than if you tried to save a little bit of money and do it all yourself and take longer.
No, and I love that advice, and I'm kind of curious. It's like when you and Susan have gone through the process, because I've heard from other business owners who say, oh, my gosh, you know, I have all these quotes and proposals. It's like, what advice would you give other women business professionals if they own a business? How do you evaluate the different, you know, proposals and quotes and whatnot? Because it's not all on price, if, at least that's not how I shop. So I'm curious, how would you recommend people look through that? You know, when you have all these different options, what do you look for, and how would that be advice to some of our listeners?
Well, one of the products that we provide to our customers is ongoing marketing management. So, for instance, if a client, you know, we determine that, okay, the next step in the marketing plan is develop a website. So we would do a request for proposal to anywhere from 3 to 8 max, probably, website design companies, and included in that would be the marketing plan and a strategy for the website, what we needed that website to do for that particular client, and really any information we could provide, and then with a set list of questions that we want to make sure they answer for us in the proposal, and then mm-hmm. gathering all that information and laying it out in a spreadsheet so you can do, you know, the analysis of each different proposal. Now, as you alluded to, a big piece of that, and not just for women-owned companies, but a big piece of that is fit. Which one of those vendors is going to be a good fit with that C-suite, with that management team, with that sales department? So I think the personal component is huge, because all else being, you know, relatively equal, it comes down to who do you want to work with for the next, you know, 3 to 6 months on getting your programs up and running. And why would you work with someone that's, you know, grumpy and kind of staid when you can work with someone that's fun and energetic? So I think that is huge.
I do too, and it's like I always, you know, again, just hearing so many times where people say, man, it's like, you know, when we chose a vendor, it's like, you know, sometimes price is not the only evaluation. So it's really good to hear that you kind of go through those steps and that process, because I think there is a lot to be said for just who do you feel you click with and have a good connection with, and that may not be the low price leader. It may be somebody that, you know, you just have a great relationship with. And I will say, personally, on my side, that's been huge for the vendors I've worked with. If I don't have synergy with them, I just know it's going to be set up to fail. So great advice, great advice. Here's another one for you in our limited time. But, you know, I think all of us in business have one or two key things that we think we do really, really well that really has helped us, you know, on our path to success. And I'd just love to know from your standpoint, you know, kind of in the newer business stage, but you guys are still in that 3-year window, which you're, you know, a startup, right? What do you feel are one or two of the key things that you and Susan have done that just really you feel is central to how you've succeeded and where you are right now?
From a client perspective, one thing that we do really well, which our clients consistently praise us for, is stepping back and looking at the big business picture. I mean, we don't just come in and say, oh, here's the marketing plan, and, you know, the first thing we're going to do is revamp the website. It's, okay, let's make sure there's a strategic plan in place. Let's make sure there's a business plan in place. Let's draft the marketing plan based on research that maps to those sales goals in this year's business plan, ultimately leading to, you know, the strategic goals of where they want the company to be in 3 to 5 years. So I think a lot of it is our big enterprise marketing background, which is, you know, looking at the bigger picture and wanting the company to be successful on many different levels.
And I'm curious, do you utilize the fact that you were with Microsoft before? I mean, do you feel that that's a component that is a value attractor, you know, to people working with you when you say you've worked with Microsoft? I'm just curious.
It has only ever been positive for us. Microsoft on a resume has opened, you know, many doors.
Nice. I just love that. Well, here's a question that I hope you can think fast on your feet with, because, you know, we all, as we go about our day, we all see, and I just would love your advice on this to our listeners, is businesswomen who just miss the mark in certain things in business. As we come across, as we see things or we come across what women do, I mean, what are two things that you think are just not good things that you see businesswomen do that you think they should change to be more successful in business? I'm curious. We're going to wrap it up with that.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, I think the first one is tunnel vision, not looking at and I guess this isn't just business women, but this is business people in general, so I apologize for that. But really taking a very small short-term view of what they're trying to accomplish. So not looking at, you know, the broad view of where do they want that business to be in 3 to 5 years and how to get there. I think that's a huge mistake. So make a plan and live with the plan.
Do you feel women think too small? I see women that very much limit themselves. Do you agree with that?
I agree. They think, well, I'm just going to have this little tiny business, and they don't look out about what that business could grow and become nationwide. They just focus on that little, you know, my little niche neighborhood.
Yep, I agree. Okay, and you were going to say another one. Sorry, I interrupted you.
Well, this is definitely for women, but dressing inappropriately for the business occasion.
I cannot agree more. I have to step in here because, you know, as part of our CWI, Connected Women of Influence group, but I'm going to do a little plug here, is we have monthly CEO and executive panel forum breakfast events that are really our signature public events for business women and professional women. And in April, we actually have that topic, which I know it's a little edgy here, but our topic for our San Diego group is, has cleavage, you know, affected business women in business today? You know, I mean, does it matter, you know, what you wear? Does it matter, you know, how you come across as far as your look and, you know, how you dress in business? And I think personally that's going to be a hot topic. So for anybody that's interested, you can check out our website at www.connectedwomenofinfluence.com and look for our April CEO Executive Panel Forum. But before that, one more plug, I got to say, on March 27th, which is next Tuesday, in the Carlsbad, California area, we are having our March CEO Executive Panel Forum breakfast event, and that topic is on the alpha female in business. Boy, is that a hot topic. And the question becomes, should we aspire to be that as professional women in business? So again, if any of you are looking to be able to be in the San Diego area and want to join us, we would love to have you visit us. The place to find that information again is connectedwomenofinfluence.com. Lynn, I'm going to throw one more question to you. Is there anything I haven't asked you that you feel propelled to share or give advice or lessons learned or a quick 2 cents to some of our listeners for, you know, for business women to lead the way and better their best and raise the bar?
Yes, please stay current with technology and business trends. Do not let all these exciting new advancements pass you by. Your clients will notice.
Well, and I got to add to that one, because you've been sharing with me that you guys are really embracing, you know, the whole social media thing very intricately over at Upstart Group. I mean, I find a lot of businesswomen, including myself, it has been so difficult to keep up on social media. What are your final thoughts on that as far as advice for folks that, you know, embrace or begrudgingly embrace the social media age?
Let me say that it must be done. So figure out a way to do it. And once again, hire someone who can help you. Don't try to do it alone. We hired someone. I have a little sheet every morning of what I'm supposed to do on Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn, and I can spend my 30 minutes and check it off. So find someone to help you.
And how is it going for you? I mean, when you think of you spending time doing that, is it really difficult for you to go through that process, or are you keeping to the schedule and, you know, doing your tweeting and your Twittering and your Facebook you know, comments and likes?
I am good about 3 days a week, and I need to get it to the full 5. But it's not hard to do, you know, going through my little checklist of what I'm supposed to look for and the things to retweet and always keeping my eye out for things that I can post independently.
I love it, because I have to share with you, I'm begrudgingly embracing it, I have to say, but I'm really getting there. And I have to say, I was at an event the other day where two of our CWI members were speaking and being featured. And so I took out my BlackBerry, I clicked a picture, and I'm getting ready to post it online so I can say, see, look at these two superstars. And I'm starting to get little ideas of what people are doing by just paying attention to how other people are posting on Facebook. Do you find that as well?
Absolutely. And if someone posts something that you think would be of interest to your audience, repost.
Repost. I like that tip. On that, I'm going to say that's our final comment, but it is basically our show for today. I want to give you a quick reference. The Women Leading the Way radio show is hosted by Connected Women of Influence. You can get to our site at connectedwomenofinfluence.com. I want to say thank you to Lynn Folks with Upstart Group again. It's been my sincere pleasure to host you today. And I want to thank our listeners for listening in. Our next radio show will be April 9th at 9 a.m. And I want to say thanks for coming. Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships. For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.